Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
This hour is brought to you by NJ Diet. Visit njdiet.com or call 855-5NJ-DIET.
MLB analyst Craig Calcaterra, author of the Cup of Coffee newsletter.
Anyone on the Cubs has to be sort of distracted right now. I mean, we saw the little tough stuff about Joe Buck asking Chris Bryant during the All-Star game if he's being distracted.
As we sit here now in the middle of July, not knowing where you're going to be at the end of July, how do you keep your concentration through all that?
Honestly, I feel like moving around all these positions really helps me. I mean, it's a new thing every day, and I'm just, trying to focus on that day. And, right now I still got the Cubs in my chest, and I'm proud of that. And I'm proud to play for such an unbelievable city, and until they tell me I'm not, I'll go out there and give it all I got.
So is that a distraction about a distraction? I'm not sure. Any veteran will tell you who gets traded, you'll see a press conference with him or an interview with him 2 weeks later saying, yeah, it was really rough those last couple of weeks. All the uncertainty makes playing and being prepared really hard. And that's often why you see guys who get traded at the deadline then just go off and play really, really well for a month or two because, hey, at least they have certainty.
Craig Calcaterra with Bernstein and Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Craig Calcaterra is brought to you by Lakeside Bank, Chicago's deeply rooted commercial real estate bank. Lakeside Bank, it's about time. He joins us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And he is on Twitch as well, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. You should be starting your day with the Cup of Coffee newsletter to get everything you need to know about baseball and the rest of the world. Hi, Craig. How are you?
I'm doing great.
So last night, Javier Baez goes full-blown competitive Javi, irrespective of anything else going on with the season or any trade deadline. We just got a little pure baseball moment there. And we were talking just how much fun it is that if baseball still struggles to market itself, that's a good way to do it right there. And if you're Amir Garrett, he knows and he seemed to understand he's got to take it, right? If you dish it out, you got to take it.
You would think so. There was like a still shot that I saw of Garrett just glaring at Baez, but all I could think is, what are you glaring at? You started this back in May with your pounding and chest pounding and thumping and all that stuff that you were doing. I think, what really stinks about all of this is Major League Baseball suspended Garrett for doing that back in May against the Cubs for exuberance or over a celebration or whatever it was. And I thought that was just baloney. I thought that was a really bad move. Because, why do that? Now, I worry that someone at the league office right now is thinking, well, if we did it to Garrett, we have to do it to Baez. But that was one of the more purely fun things I've seen in baseball this year, the row, row, row your boat thing. I was just wondering if he was going to get to first base before someone thought to actually relay the ball in.
That's where we sat with it. Yes, we were trying to figure out if everybody just agreed that was the walk-off single because –
who was somebody was behind him like saying, hey, you got to go to first base, dude. I can't remember who
Contreras.
That was. It was Contreras.
But I do
you
think
you have a Merkel's boner.
Thank you. See, men of a certain age, we remember it and we like saying it.
I'm sorry. I wasn't supposed to.
We're going to stop saying that word on the show today. Stop.
I laugh because you two share a brain, and because of the obvious reasons, we're all 12-year-olds. I do think that might have been what Amir Garrett was saying, though, to the umpire at the end of the game, because we saw those two talking, and I could totally see him saying, hey, I was suspended for this. What the heck?
I know, it was ridiculous, but fantastic. I mean, Garrett runs hot. I see him play a fair amount since he's in Ohio here, and he's always run hot like that. And, you know, he's never going to be as hot as Baez is, and he's not as good as Baez is. So it's good to see someone sort of give it back to him. You know, play with fire, you're going to get burned.
White Sox get Eloy Jimenez back yesterday. He's 0-for-4, and for some reason, Tony La Russa is going to play him in left field today. I would hide his gloves forever. But we were looking at the fielder independent pitching of one Dallas Keuchel and seeing that is just a tad under 5, which is not good.
Wow.
We have victimized by the home runs and, you know, well above his career number. So that's a bit of an alarm bell for me looking at Dallas Keuchel. Hopeful that maybe getting Yasmani Grandal back to receive him can optimize him.
Yeah, he's the clear weak link in what is otherwise a very strong rotation. And the thing is, by comparison, he looks even weaker just because, normally you could be the fourth starter or the fifth starter on a contender team and do what Keuchel's been doing this year. But it just sticks out a little bit more when you've been getting all these great performances from Lynn and everybody else. The one thing that you could say for him is he's put in innings. He, like all the rest of his guys, has over 100 innings already. And the hallmark of a championship team year by year, I mean, just go back over the years that teams win the championship. They're just the teams that happen to have healthy starting pitching, guys that put in big innings. And even the weak ones like Keuchel this year, if he goes on a 2-week stretch where he sort of remembers who he is, you can still make that play. But yeah, that's something that with a big lead in the Central, a lot of people say, well, you don't want to go crazy. No, add a starter. It's not going to hurt. Tony La Russa will figure out how to play too many guys. So somebody who is putting in the sort of performance that Keuchel's putting in right now, I really do think that you need to bolster that a little bit. As for, oh my God, don't play him in left field. Please don't play him in his left field. Give him the DH. He shouldn't have been playing in left field before he got hurt, to be honest, if you had just seen him play over a couple of years. He should be Nelson Cruz. There's nothing wrong with that.
I'm not ready to talk about Nelson Cruz's outfield play, even now. Especially with Tony La Russa being in a conversation. So let's also focus on where those...
10 years ago, come on.
I don't care. So let's focus on the two who I think who are going to go somewhere, and you bring up the idea of a starter, and that's Kyle Gibson and also the fate of Joey Gallo and where they might go in all of this.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. There are a number of starters out there right now. John Gray is one of them. Some people are talking about Hendricks. I don't think Hendricks is going anywhere. I think the Cubs will hold on to him.
Pineda, too, is being brought up, I saw.
Yeah, I don't know how confident I'd feel Pineda pitching in a championship environment. He's been fine, but he's one I worry about a little bit. But, you know, Kyle Gibson is one. If you want to go for the bullpen, there's another Ranger there, Ian Kennedy, who's available that some people have said might be a good fit on a team like the White Sox. I've seen Charlie Morton mentioned. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think the Braves are actually going to try to add rather than subtract. And then the big dog out there, which I don't think the White Sox should be in at all, but given the last week that the Nationals have had, Max Scherzer is going to be a trade candidate. And he has said that he will waive his 10-5 no trade rights for the right situation. I think the White Sox would be the right situation because he wants to win another championship, but he would cost way, way too much, I think, in terms of talent. I don't think that White Sox need him, but can you imagine getting somebody like that and pairing him with Lynn? That would be like a Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling situation, except the guys are way cooler.
what did the return for Adam Frazier tell you about this market? Because it gives us a data point to start with, that was one of the more sought after names of a guy who still was more than just a rental. And I know none of us really are prospect guys here, you know, for lack of a better term, prospect people. But how do we rate that return on that deal?
You know, I think that if you followed San Diego's press and the people who follow the Padres, they thought that they got him for a song. And I think a big reason for that was because the shortstop prospect, whose name is escaping me right now, that they sent to Pittsburgh, is never going to get a chance in San Diego because Fernando Tatis is there. But my understanding is he's a pretty good guy. He's got a chance to be a regular starter, not just sort of a utility guy or a lightning in a bottle sort of dude. So, you know, one guy who could be a solid major leaguer and then just some organizational depth doesn't seem like a lot for a guy like Frazier. But we've seen this over the last couple of years. You're not getting a ton of talent in return. And I think the Pirates even sent money along with Frazier to San Diego. So you can't, it's not like the days, no one's doing Herschel Walker trades anymore. Okay. You're not going to get a huge number of prospects for a guy, unless they are someone like a Scherzer who's under team control on a big contract for a while. But even then you're taking on so much money, you can't really expect it. So I thought it was a decent return for Pittsburgh, but then when you're Pittsburgh, what are your expectations? You're just trying to, you know, make sure you have enough warm bodies out there because you don't have any interest in winning.
That's the thing to me is I think that that Pittsburgh rebuild, if you want to call it that, rebuild implies that there's a build. And I don't know if they're at that point yet. I think you could be seeing four straight years of 1-1s out of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as we're sitting here right now, I've got a couple of guys on my porch. They're doing some work. There's some wood railing above my porch that's rotting and because I'm a terrible homeowner. And I call them in and I'm having them work on the rotting railing. And they asked me what kind of wood I wanted to use for it. And I'm telling them just, I'm going to move in like 2 years, just kind of do what will make it look respectable. And we'll keep the HOA off my ass for a little while. That's what I need you to do. That's the Pittsburgh Pirates. Okay. That's what they are. They are me doing home maintenance. Just make sure the thing doesn't fall down before you cash out.
Just save the Columbo picture. That's all we need.
Well, you wrote about the Anaheim Angels today, and the story that you wrote about had to do with the ongoing mistreatment of minor leaguers and the disconnect between the business of big league baseball and the business of minor league baseball and the people involved. And for me, it was ominous. As someone who follows the Cubs closely and who cares about the Cubs, if anyone who cares about the Cubs, when you talk about Artie Moreno and his plans to build a new stadium, creating a massive real estate development to make $1 zillion, and how the money that that'll make dwarfs any marginal gains that a deeper, healthy farm system is or humane farm system is going to make for him. Then when you talk about the Pirates, I get a little bit of that same Cubs thing as well about motivation to win. During this pare down, during this, as they're lopping off salaries, I don't get the sense that Tom Ricketts is really looking forward to paying out a whole lot more of them as they really transfer over to being a billion-dollar real estate business more than a baseball one. Is that a reasonable fear?
Oh, I think it's a very reasonable fear, because if you were running the Chicago Cubs post-2016, I'm not saying that you sign Baez, Rizzo, Bryant, and Contreras and everybody to long-term big deals, because, you know, that could be bad and some of those guys are going to age. And, you know, Rizzo's a guy that you don't want to necessarily be paying tons and tons of money to going forward. But you lock up somebody. You have a vision for a contending team, a consistently contending team with a star or two and you know, a good supporting cast for the long haul. I'm not saying the Yankees are a replicable model. I'm not saying that they're even an admirable model given what they look like this year. But that's a team that at least is always thinking about who's going to be helping this team contend for the years going forward. The Cubs didn't do that. The Cubs got their championship, started plowing all kinds of money into that development around Wrigley Field, and have basically let the talent die. There is no way forward for this Cubs team that looks particularly competitive. In fact, it looks more like the Angels than anything else. You're going to have a star. I think Javi Baez stays. That's my guess, is that they're going to at least claim to be building around Javi Baez and at least for one more year Contreras. And there will be a patina of competitiveness there that looks respectable, kind of like how having Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani looks respectable, but the foundation is not there. The farm system is not there. The long-term vision is not there. You have enough for people to pay their money to come see the Cubs, enough to pay for the cable package to watch them, but not enough to be a consistent winner, because that's not where the money comes from. The marginal value of the Cubs to the Ricketts family is the real estate, the name brand, the intellectual property, and the broadcasting deal.
And that makes me very, very attuned to what happens with a trade for Kimbrel and a trade for Bryant, because those are the two where you should get back a significant return. Shouldn't be a money dump. Shouldn't even be Yu Darvish part two. You should get back something. And I know you just said nobody's getting back the kind of prospects return that they've wanted. We've talked about it now, especially over this last season as a whole in baseball, beginning in the offseason. But there should be value given to Kimbrel and Bryant when it comes to the return that the Cubs should get on those two.
I agree. I think there's maybe even a bigger chance of getting value for Kimbrel just because he's having such a good year. Everybody just kind of goes crazy for a lockdown closer at the deadline, maybe more so than they should. And I think that they're going to hold on to him until Friday. And I think if they're smart, there's going to be a bidding war for Kimbrel. They should get at least one surefire, solid major league player, whether he's a minor leaguer right now or somebody who's a young major leaguer with some service time. I'm not saying a top prospect. I'm not saying a former number one pick or a blue chipper, but you should get some guy who can at least project to be a fixture for the Cubs for several years. Maybe you get that with Bryant too. Obviously he's going to be more of a rental, but I really, and you know, maybe more of a wild card too, given how up and down he's been and some injuries he's had. But yeah, you have to get something from these two guys that says, these are, you know, we're sorry to see them go. We thank them for their service, but they are going to at least give us something in back that will help us be a contender going forward. I don't know if you get it. I really don't know. I think you have a better chance of getting it with Kimbrel than you do with Bryant, though.
Before we let you go, through what prism should White Sox fans be watching these games now? We're a long way away from the playoffs, but it looks like this division is theirs. And we've talked a lot about the good problem to have of playing too many players, having too many players for these positions, as you mentioned. Are you looking to be as healthy as you can be? Are you looking to find the best circle of trust for high-leverage relievers? Is it making sure you have the best eighth and ninth inning defensive team? Rather than just, you know, outcomes, without having to scoreboard watch here, what is the best context for the rest of the White Sox regular season in your mind?
As a big fan of the 1990s Braves, who every single year had like a 9-game lead by the end of July and were just getting ready for the postseason, I can tell you that trying to gain that sort of thing is just a fool's errand. You can't control health. I mean, no matter what, you know, the whole, we're going to try to stay healthy. Well, no, you got to play your players. You got to play your games. They're going to get hurt or they're not. So health is something you want, but you can't really plan for. The reliever thing is interesting. Given La Russa and given, you know, his history with being creative with relief pitching and everything like that, I think you do sort of mess around and see who your, as you said, circle of trust is in late innings. That's kind of fun. But for the most part, look, your magic number is like 56 right now. This is not exactly in the bag yet. It is, practically speaking, in the bag, but I think you just have to forget the records, play for another month or so. You have to just play as if you're in a race, because guys will atrophy, guys will sort of lose their edge if you start approaching it very differently. And for all the bad things we say about Tony La Russa, he's been in enough pennant races, he's had enough strong teams that he knows that too. You just got to play and pretend it's May.
Well, and I think we've even seen that of him when it comes to the way he managed against the Brewers. Like that was a series that I was definitely watching because it was exciting. And Kopech ends up leaving earlier than expected. We see Hendricks come in for that 6-out save, and that was a game that held more significance, I think, to some than others, and a good example here.
Well, it had some local flavor too. But you know, the thing is, yeah, you don't got to play it like it's the seventh game of a playoff series. But you know, an inning here or an inning there off for a pitcher that you might not give an inning off to in a tight race—that's about the extent of it.
Craig, great as always. Appreciate it, and enjoying the work every day. I know having to do it like in the car and your college visits and all of that could not have been easy. I did not envy that.
Oh, well, I mean, the alternative was to let my daughter drive, and that was just not going to happen. So we just had to stay up late Sunday night.
It doesn't sound that bad. I'm just saying.
Understood. Trust me. Craig Calcaterra, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Craig.
Every Tuesday at 10 o'clock, he joins us. Coming up next, we're going to get the latest on the developing situation with Simone Biles from Maggie Hendricks of Bally Sports, who has been busy with opinions, thoughts, and news from these Olympics. She will join us next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
You know, I haven't spoken to her because she's in the competition. It's just too hard to know the severity of what the injury is. I'm obviously praying that she'll be able to compete in the all-around final. I think that Simone is the biggest story going into the Olympics. So this is just, it's really, really devastating. But I think it's also just really important to think about like how much pressure has been on her. And there's only so much that someone can take. You know, she's human, and I think sometimes people forget that. And Simone, just like everyone else, is doing the best that she can. So I'm going to be praying that she can still compete in the all-around final. And, you know, Simone is there right now cheering for her teammates. Her cheering for them is going to help them out a lot. She's still supporting her teammates. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching the competition. Obviously took a quick break to be on here with you guys, but I'm really nervous watching. I just want everyone else to finish the competition to be healthy.
Former U.S. gymnast Allie Raisman on the Today Show on NBC this morning talking about the developing situation regarding Simone Biles' withdrawal from competition. And while they are saying it is a medical issue, that does not necessarily mean it's a physical issue. And it's important to make that distinction and to understand the reality and the truth of that. Here to help us out, who has been following this very closely and writing about it for Bally Sports, Maggie Hendricks, who is on Twitter at Maggie Hendricks, joins us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Maggie, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you guys doing?
We're good to talk to you, Maggie. Happy to discuss this with you because we know you're watching The Vault live. So tell us what you saw watching the live broadcast of Simone Biles on that vault before she had everything unfold.
Well, the first thing was that in the warm-up, she just kind of looked lost in midair. That's the only way I could describe it. And she usually does an Aminar, which is 2.5 twists, and she did 1.5 twists on her doubles with Yurchenko, and it just didn't look right, and something felt wrong. And a lot of the people who were there in Tokyo also said that. And then when she did it actually in competition, same thing. She only did 1.5 twists, and which is a much lower scoring vault than Simone is capable of. And when she landed, she crouched and then took a really big step. So it was a low scoring vault for her. I mean, really for anybody, that was a low scoring vault. And then we started talking to a trainer, and then saw her walking off the floor, and USA Gymnastics said it's a medical issue. And now Simone did do a press conference afterwards and said it was a mental health issue. And like Dan was saying, like that, those things aren't separate. Mental health is medical. So she is now reevaluating and we'll see if she does the all around competition in 2 days. But, that's why we didn't see Simone out there. It was tough to watch because you know she was struggling. And you knew she had to be struggling pretty badly to not be competing.
And to put this into sports terms, as far as the difficulty of her vault, it's not something we hadn't seen before out of her. The Olympic trials, she notably threw in some of the most difficult vaults in the world. And this was something she was fully capable of doing, to give that background to people who may not know that the difficulty of the vault wasn't the concern here.
No, definitely not the difficulty of the vault. Honestly, I think if you're not a gymnastics person, the best explanation I can give is the double doink that we saw a couple years ago in the Bears game, because we'd seen Cody Parkey hit those even harder field goals, right? Like we've seen him do much more difficult things, but in that moment with all of that stress and that pressure is when he couldn't do it. And so I think it was a similar kind of thing. The difficulty was not an issue. She's done Aminars in her sleep for years. She did an Aminar in 2016. So it definitely wasn't that. It was definitely something bigger weighing down on her.
We have a little bit of breaking news that I just want to jump in with here. And breaking news on the Score is powered by Odyssey Sports, presented by BetQL. Become a better sports bettor, get smarter to beat the books, and download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. Emily Kaplan is reporting that the Chicago Blackhawks are in the late stages of trade talks to acquire Vegas Golden Knights goalie Marc-Andre Fleury in a trade.
Really?
Yes, yeah. That is according.
I mean, I know I'm not a hockey person, but still.
That's
household
a
household name.
That's a name you know, even if you're not a hockey person. But that is ESPN's Emily Kaplan, who says the Blackhawks are in, as she describes, in the late stages of trade talks to acquire Marc-Andre Fleury. That would be a thing, and that would mean that they become competitive every night. Obviously, we're going to talk about that in just a bit with Jay Zawoski.
Can I just add to it real quick?
Yes.
No salary retained by Vegas. Nothing going back to Vegas. They're just getting him.
Wow.
They're just taking Marc-Andre Fleury.
Okay.
So there you go.
Oh, that happened.
All right.
This is quite the sports day already, and we haven't even gotten started.
But Maggie, there have been comparisons, and a lot of people, and I think for wrong and weird reasons, are comparing Simone Biles' withdrawal to Kerry Strug and her moment in the same discipline, in the vault, when even on that bad ankle decided to take the vault to help her team. We know the imagery. We know her being carried by Bella Caroli, whose name has since been sullied. We know who else was standing there with her, helping her off? Then does this mean we look at the Kerry Strug moment retroactively differently, and should we?
Yes, we absolutely should. Because, first of all, Kerry Strug was a teenager at the time, and we know the influence Bella Caroli had over the sport, and we know how he was a big bellowing man, and he was just saying to her, you can do it. You can do it, Kerry. You can do it. We've all seen the video. So she didn't really, nobody said to her, Kerry, can you do it? Do you want to do this? Is your ankle okay for you to do this again? No, nobody was looking out for her in that moment. And as you mentioned, Dan, one of the people who was taking care of her in that moment was Larry Nassar. So if we can't look back at that differently and realize Kerry Strug never competed again, ever, in her career. Gymnastics was over for her in that moment. And so, you know, I do think we need to look at that very differently. You know, it's a gold medal that every single one of those seven women should be proud of having. But at the same time, we also need to look at it in the larger picture of everything that has gone bad with USA Gymnastics. And kind of be a little bit angry at ourselves for not seeing the warning signs at the time.
Well, and we talked a little bit about Biles' statement as to why she wasn't going to retire and why she was going to keep competing. And she had to acknowledge, even in that moment, Larry Nassar. And what were your thoughts when you heard her talk about that and how we're seeing what we're seeing play out right now in front of our eyes today?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when I watched that interview, I cried, because to have that weighing on her is a weight that I don't think any of us can truly understand. That she said, I have to be the living, breathing memory of all of the failures of USA Gymnastics to protect their athletes. I have to be the one saying, no, you guys screwed up and you have to look me in the eye. And I'll tell you, I was at the Olympic trials in St. Louis in last month, and there were no survivors there who weren't working. Like, Lori Hernandez was there, but she was working. But that was it. And then Simone was competing. There are no gymnasts, like the former competitors, the Olympic alumni, they are not having anything to do with USA Gymnastics. That wasn't true at USA Swimming. USA Swimming trials, I couldn't walk 2 feet without tripping over an Olympian. But here, they were nowhere to be found. So that pressure really is on Simone, because she's the only one still competing.
It's amazing to me, too, that she gave an interview in which she said that she might have stepped away from competition sooner, but she felt a responsibility to represent survivors, to keep it up front and center, to keep people top of mind because she's a victim. And the weight of that responsibility, let alone traveling to Japan in all the COVID environment that we're in, with everything that's going on, to then not understand or not have any sort of empathy for that would just be astonishing to me, because of what she felt she had to do for things much bigger and more important than herself.
Yeah, and then you also throw in all of the pressure of, and I'll admit I'm part of it, of how often we're saying how she's the GOAT and she can't be beaten and nobody can ever top her. You know, that's a whole other kind of pressure too, that, again, most of us cannot understand. Layla maybe can understand because she's the GOAT. But, you know, honestly, I mean, even that amount of pressure. So when you think of all of these different things, and then also remember that Simone, one of her other motivations is she was a foster kid until her grandparents adopted her and became her parents. But she was a foster kid, and that is also something that she feels like she needs to continue to compete to carry that flag. So, like, I mean, everything she's carrying is a lot, and I'm honestly proud of her for saying, you know what, I need to take a break or I'm going to really get hurt. Because that's the thing with gymnastics. If you are not completely focused,
right,
you can get really, really badly hurt.
You wrote a column already for Bally Sports. I'm sure that was like breathing for you, being able to talk about it with the background that you have. Can you give us some of the highlights of what you had to say and where we can find it?
So you can find it at ballysports.com on our national site. And the thing I really, really hope we take away from all of this and that I talked about in here is that the physical and the mental are not separate. We can't like put our brains in a jar and then go act physically somewhere else. You know, we're embodied beings. We walk through the world with our mind and our body all in one. So we can't say, oh, Naomi Osaka, the mental struggle she had no effect on how she played, or what Simone Manuel went through earlier this month, or of course, Simone Biles. We are embodied people, and the physical and the mental are not separate.
Maggie, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Maggie.
Maggie Hendricks of Bally Sports. And if you were listening during that interview, we also broke the news that five-time All-Star and reigning Vezina Trophy winner Marc-Andre Fleury is coming to the Blackhawks. They apparently are just purchasing him. I'm not sure what the overall consideration is. It sounds like a cash deal that he's just coming to the Blackhawks in exchange for nothing. The 36-year-old goaltender will be apparently backed up by Kevin Lankinen, and here we go. This changes the landscape of the Blackhawks season with one single move. Rather than doing the midday midway, we'll bring in Jay Zawoski, who's gathering information about it. He's talking to people about it. It's funny. I had a conversation yesterday with a hockey coach where we just talked about this sort of theoretically, and it's so funny that now it's actually happening. Crazy stuff going on. So we'll do that next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
DeBrincat and a save Fleury. He dove across as DeBrincat. Not sure if he got a lot on that, but Fleury dove across. No stick to keep it out.
Well, that can't be easy, playing goalie with no stick. That's no fun. He didn't need a stick. That's Marc-Andre Fleury, who apparently is now the Blackhawks goalie.
For some reason, we can't quite figure out yet because there hasn't been anything exchanged for him.
So yesterday,
he's just here.
Apparently, that's a cash considerations deal to remove his cap hit from the Las Vegas Golden Knights and place it on the salary cap of the Blackhawks. And yes, we need to also wonder if the Blackhawks want to just kind of make headlines here to keep them positive, in that we're not talking about the bigger, more important story outside of the hockey story for the Blackhawks, that every time something goes on like this, it distracts people from their legal attempts to wrangle out from any sort of civil responsibility from allowing people to be victimized because their former assistant coach was given a recommendation to go work elsewhere where he could victimize more people. That's obviously more important. Anytime we talk about the Blackhawks, we need to say we know that's more important, but we can multi-channel here and focus on what this means to this year's hockey team. Jay, this means now, if my amateur reading of this, they become night in and night out an increment more competitive.
Definitely. Marc-Andre Fleury is coming off a career year. He won the Vezina Trophy. Granted, it was behind the terrific Vegas Golden Knights defense. It's going to be a lot different here. The Hawks defense is nowhere near what Vegas's was, but this is not a guy like Marty Turco, right, who came in at the end of his career and just sucked in his... And
that was our fault. We made him bad.
We're not talking to Marc-Andre Fleury on this or any show on the station. I refuse to allow it, but there's a little caveat here. Over the last few minutes, some of the great insiders in hockey, two of my favorites, Bob McKenzie and Elliot Friedman, are saying that Fleury has considered retiring if he was traded. So we don't know if that's on the table, if Marc-Andre Fleury is just going to call it a career and it's some sort of cap thing the Hawks are doing for Vegas. I don't know. I would imagine the Hawks would not make this trade without assurances that Marc-Andre Fleury is going to play. Granted, they gave up. Now, Emily Kaplan says they gave up a prospect. Hekker Ryan's his name. He's not a high prospect by any means. So there is something going the other way. But if Stan Bowman makes this deal with the assumption that Marc-Andre Fleury is going to play and he doesn't, add that to another reason Stan Bowman should not have a job.
That you have to do your due diligence.
You have to know, right?
You have
like,
to.
You can't just be like, we're going to trade for this guy and put $7 million on our cap. Oh, he's not going to play. What? Now what?
The rumblings out of Pittsburgh were a trade fell through to get him back.
I don't know. I have to believe he's going to play. I mean, look, if you want to question Stan Bowman's drafting or trading or contract signing, that's fine. But he's not an idiot. He's not a stupid human being. I would imagine he would ask those questions and do his due diligence. Agents are contacted throughout these things. It's not just, we made a trade, now tell the agent. Whenever high-profile players are traded, everyone knows about it. So, I don't know. It's if he plays, they're definitely significantly better.
Doesn't he have a reputation as a really cool guy, too?
Yes, an awesome locker room guy, which maybe they need right now. I saw people in Vegas saying that he's the king of Vegas. People love him there. He could run for mayor. That's how beloved he is in Las Vegas, and he's going to come here, and if he plays, he's going to steal the hearts of Hawks fans for 1 year, and then we'll see what happens. But if he plays, it's $7 million more on the Blackhawks salary cap, and you've got to imagine that that's going to cost them Calvin DeHaan or Nikita Zadorov, which I think a lot of Hawks fans are fine with. But free agency starts tomorrow at 11. The Hawks were looking at another defenseman. It's going to be really interesting what this team looks like come opening day. I don't know. This Fleury thing is very, very strange. Scott Powers had this 2 weeks ago as a little blurb in his Duncan Keith trade piece. Oh, by the way, the Hawks are kicking the tires on Marc-Andre Fleury. Now they've done it, and if this is their guy and he does indeed play, they're going to have to do some wild cap gymnastics. I'm really interested to see what happens next.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you next is what's the latest in the last 24 hours since we've talked about qualifying offers for people?
Yeah, so they did not qualify David Kampf or Pia Suter. Suter was asking for a lot more money than they were comfortable paying. And when you look at the Blackhawks roster, I want to qualify this. I really like Pia Suter. He's a good player, was a great rookie, good signing by the Blackhawks for sure. Another one of those international free agents. But they're really heavy in the middle six. That's the last thing the Hawks need. So they had to know this deal was close and they're going to let Pia Suter walk and become an unrestricted free agent. They also did not qualify David Kampf, but there is some expectation he'll be back. Zadorov, Nylander, and who am I missing? Brandon Hagel were all qualified yesterday. So there's some thought that maybe Zadorov could be traded, even if he does sign. But there's just so much going on here. And this Fleury thing with no salary retained, that's wild. I can't imagine how this is going to play out. It's really hard to get myself to opening day with this roster as it is right now.
Well, Jesse Granger, who covers the Vegas Golden Knights for The Athletic, just says a source close to Marc-Andre Fleury says that the trade is done, and he found out through Twitter.
Oh, God.
That sucks.
That can't be good.
No, you can't predispose him to wanting to do this if the proper channels aren't being followed. Let me ask a quick sort of X and O question here, Jay. You know Jeremy Colliton's defensive system better than I. I know that's a button pusher for you. Marc-Andre Fleury will play the puck actively. And I know that there was some conflict as they were switching between Robin Leonard, who is a big stay-at-home positional kind of lump back there. Fleury's not. He gets out there, and he'll stop the ring arounds. He'll start a break. He'll make a diagonal pass. Now that Keith isn't there, and now that Seth Jones is your primary puck-moving defenseman, when you have somebody willing to do that, doesn't this stress your communication now? Like, now, whatever you like or don't like about that system, they've got to make sure that they get used to each other because of what he is more than willing to do back there.
Well, the good news is you've got a guy who is willing to learn, who is willing to communicate, and Fleury. He's also willing to teach. You know, it's a guy who's been on great teams his entire career. And, yeah, it's going to look a little different from Robin Leonard and even Corey Crawford. And Seth Jones is different from Duncan Keith. So it is going to be interesting to see how this team adapts to Jeremy Cowlton's system. The other thing about Cowlton, though, is now he's kind of out of excuses. They paid for a number one defenseman. They're apparently paying for a stud goalie. Now, you know, you can't really say, well, you know, the defense is young and they're not really that good. His excuses are running out. This is a prove it year for Jeremy Cowlton. It should have been last year, but apparently it wasn't. Now the excuses are running out. He's got a team that should be able to compete next year. Not for a cup, but definitely this should be a playoff team.
Yeah, here's the pulled quote from the Scott Powers blurb at the end of that article you speak of. It says, according to a source, the Blackhawks might still even address other areas of their team. The Blackhawks like how their forward group is shaping up and believe they have enough there to be competitive. They know there is a need for a quality defenseman or two. Now they're maybe just one, but they're open to addressing their goaltending depth. According to a league source, the Blackhawks could be in play for Vegas Golden Knights goalie Marc-Andre Fleury. With Fleury having just 1 year left on his contract, the Hawks could financially afford his $7 million cap hit if needed. Well, that's established now, and that's where we are. But we have to see how this plays out on his side.
What I need to find out is what happens salary cap-wise if Fleury refuses to report. That's what I need to know.
I can't imagine a guy walking away from the game right after winning the Vezina Trophy. No real injury issues? He hasn't been dogged by anything?
No, not really.
Okay.
I mean, we used to say people love playing in Chicago. But now with all this Brad Aldrich stuff floating around, maybe Marc-Andre Fleury's like, I don't want to be part of that. While that's all going on and coming out and happening. Ugh. I don't know. Look, if he plays for the Hawks, I'm thrilled. I don't know. We got to make sure he's going to. I'm sure we'll know that very, very soon. Because they'll probably have a Zoom call with him or whatever once the trade is officially announced. But if he doesn't play, oh man.
A couple of moments, we are going to turn our attention to football because Charch is here. He's in Chicago. He's going to be right in this studio, and we can talk. Not only we can talk fantasy football, we can talk actual football with the chief execution officer at guillotineleagues.com. That's next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.